fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Kerry Green is a licensed marriage and family therapist and an American Association of Sexual Educators, Counselors, and Therapists certified sex therapist. What was there? Kerry brings over 20 years of experience working with adults and couples in a variety of ways, most currently through sex therapy. Sex therapy offers a safe space to be open and vulnerable, to explore desire, sexuality, gender, communication, trauma, dysfunction, and more. We all deserve to experience safety and pleasure in our bodies, both in the intimate relationship we have with others and, importantly, with ourselves. Kerry is here to help you discover where you are on your sexual journey and where you want to be. Thank you so much for joining us, for me, very early in the morning, so 6 a.m. West Coast US. So I just want to dive straight into it. Are you okay if I just take you back a little bit to understand what your formative years were like? Is the person you are today very different from who you were in your mid-teens?
My initial answer to that, and thank you for having me, my initial answer to that would be not at all. I have always been and hope to continue to be incredibly social, communicative, open-minded, wanting to learn, wanting to grow, wanting to help others. And that was something I was doing on the playground in second grade with friends in the teen years through breakups and all the teen stuff we go through. And here I am today as a therapist, you know, helping people in the most intimate of ways with their sex lives and their sexuality. And I could not think of a more humbling profession. I love what I do.
So that sounds like you were always very comfortable in your own body, to explore your own body, to ask what you wanted from partners. And is that something you've always been very confident and comfortable with?
So that one I'll answer more of a yes and no. Mm-hmm. My sexual journey, as they say, is maybe a little bit different than most. I did not have my first experience until college. I had one boyfriend in college. Then I met my now ex-husband. So at 38 years old, I found myself being a single mom with two young children and really never had the dating experience. So although I found myself being as comfortable as I thought I could be and was at the time with those two experiences, I really didn't get to explore my interest in sex, my sexuality, what sex means to me until I was in my late 30s and really had a chance to date. I think most people have that experience, if they allow themselves to have that experience, more in their teens and 20s. Mm-hmm. So to my advantage, I was more mature. I had more life experience. Like I said, I was going through this divorce in my late 30s with two young children. And I just really wanted to own my pleasure, my happiness, my comfortability. And that was both through dating and sexual experience, as well as other aspects of my life as well.
Hmm. Did you find it after having one boyfriend in college and then your husband-to-be and then your husband as was, did you find it hard to get out there and date again as a single mom?
I didn't at all. I was really, again, I feel I'm very lucky and maybe have had a different experience than most. I was really looking forward to dating again because I hadn't really done it before. The apps were very popular at the time. Yeah. They're still most of the ways people are dating these days are through the dating apps. Mm-hmm. And I am just a people person. So I really just had a different lens to look through. I wasn't looking to get married again. I wasn't looking right away for a monogamous, you know, relationship. I was really looking just to meet people. And again, I've had so many wonderful friendships over the years. I really didn't look at dating as much different than that. Sure, it maybe was a different gender. I was looking to date simply men, and most of my friendships over the years have been women. And dating, of course, entails a lot more you know, intimacy in various ways than friendships are. But I was really just looking to meet new people, learn about their life stories, their journeys, and be able to share mine and see where I was compatible and where maybe we weren't. And I was able to date a lot. I've been single now on and off for 9 years, and I've been able to meet a lot of really wonderful people. So I'm grateful for the experience.
Do you know how you, well, obviously you didn't do now. I'm just interested to know how you got to where you are today. It's obviously, like I said, as a child, you were very open. And then there's still quite a big leap from being comfortable and confident who you are to becoming, and you're studying, researching, revising, learning, etc., to becoming a formal sex therapist. What was that like?
Absolutely. So similar to what I had said before, I just always knew I enjoyed talking to people. I enjoyed hearing their stories, how they are, who they are, mm-hmm. where they've come from, what life experiences they've had. And I remember being back in elementary school realizing I wanted to be a therapist.
Wow.
I knew what a therapist was in that time, a regular, you know, people therapist. That's what I kind of referred to it as. My parents were divorced, you know, when I was younger. And so I had a little bit of experience at the time of just knowing what a therapist was in general. And I just knew it was this person who mm-hmm. helped people with their feelings. And I knew that's what I wanted to be. So went to college, got my undergraduate degree in social work, went and got licensed as a marriage and family therapist, as you mentioned. And for about 20 years, that was my clinical experience. I was working with children, adults, couples, families, teens, with a variety of life stuff. Mm-hmm. And my most fascinating work was with couples and adults within the realm of their relationships, their intimate relationships and experiences, and their sex life, or maybe lack thereof, their kinks, their interests, their difference in desire from the person that they had been in a relationship with, sometimes 20 plus years, mm-hmm. and really just feeling like other than me, they really didn't have a place to feel comfortable talking about those things and asking about those things. Am I normal because I want to do this? Is it, you know, shameful that I've thought about that? And so about 5 years ago, around 2020, with the pandemic soon approaching, I decided to start my own private practice, dive into sex therapy, and go back to school in a sense to receive that certification. And now the only work I do is with adults and couples, strictly around the umbrella of sex therapy, which it's also been a huge learning experience for me, how much there is to talk about within sex and gender. And that's what I wake up and do each day, talk to many people and help them hopefully feel more comfortable in their own bodies, in their relationships, work through possible trauma, heal through trauma, accept and grieve sexual dysfunction, all the different things that sex therapy involves.
And you said some things there about helping people open up and talk about some of the things that perhaps they haven't talked about before. And it does still feel that there is something of a taboo talking about sex and desire and what some might consider a kink, what others certainly wouldn't. And is that something you still see? And why do you think there is still this taboo around those topics?
Yeah. It is absolutely something I still see, even with clients who are taking their time and money to come and talk to me about sex. Mm-hmm. I would say at least 50% of my clients, male, female, single, married, age doesn't matter, they're still a little uncomfortable even saying certain words to me, even sharing certain things to me. And I always start with where the client is at, especially in sex therapy. I want them to be comfortable. I, though, do believe there is and always will be, and I try not use the word always, never, but for a while there will be that shame and discomfort and misunderstanding, lack of education, experience around sex, because it has always been, and I think it always will be, a topic that we don't talk about. You know, it's not like growing up when you're sitting around the kitchen table for dinner and asking how your kid's day was at school. Mom and dad are talking about the great sex they had last night, you know, or the, you know, new position they want to try or the latest, you know, sex toy that's out there. It's just not talked about. Yeah. That would be amazing and great if it was, with, of course, appropriateness with age and all of that. But I believe it starts in the home and it starts with communication. And those families and parents that are open to even talking about safe sex and consent and feeling comfortable in our bodies, masturbation. If more families were willing to talk about those things, because they are very natural things that most people do and experience, it would be very different for people as they grow into their sexuality and their sexual lives to feel more comfortable and have those conversations with their partners, which a lot of people, if they even talk about sex, they're not talking about sex with the person they're having sex with. They're talking to their girlfriends over happy hour. They're talking to their hairstylist. They're talking to their therapist, but they're not talking to the person who they're actually laying in bed with and experiencing those things with.
Yeah. Whenever I've thought about that, it always strikes me as, yeah, it's very odd. Like I say, sometimes the person it's hardest to talk about those things is the person you're lying next to at night. And I think one of the things I know that you work on a lot is how to, and it sounds crazy in a way, how to even help a couple that might have been together 5 years, 10 years, 20 years to actually talk about sex and intimacy. How do you help them, almost feel safe having that conversation with one another? How do they start that conversation?
Yeah. So it's a contrast. It's two sides of the same coin at the same time. I really try and not differentiate sex any more than it needs to be differentiated in a conversation. So yet at the same time, I obviously understand sex is a very different topic than other things. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't talk about it loudly if we're out in public. We look around to see if there's children, or even if there's not children, if there's other adults that we might offend, or we just don't want them to hear what we're about to say. I really try and, again, start, especially in a couple, where the less comfortable person is, and start with what they are comfortable talking about. They may not even feel comfortable saying the word sex. So we may talk about how was their relationship when they first started, what attracted them to the other person, what are their common interests. I will, again, use other examples other than sex. What are conversations and topics the two of you are extremely comfortable talking about? Mm-hmm. For the lesser comfortable person when it comes to sex, I might even say, what is a topic you are more comfortable talking about than your partner? You know, they might say money, religion, parenting, travel. Okay, great. What is it about those topics that make you more comfortable? And if there's a couple little things I can grab from that and bring it over to the sex conversation, I understand talking about parenting isn't the same as orgasm. I understand talking about where you want to go on your next vacation isn't the same as, you know, speaking to your partner about possibly opening up your marriage. So again, I understand they're very different topics, but they don't have to be that far apart. So I really just start with where the client is at. Mm. And once they feel comfortable with me and I help with the language and asking the questions and maybe starting a sentence and, you know, fill in the blank, they just start to become a lot more comfortable talking about it. And I'm teaching those clients and those couples the tools to then continue those conversations outside of therapy. I don't have very much time with clients, and I always say the real, I don't like to say work, but the real change in your relationship is going to take place outside of the therapy session. I'm just here to help listen, empathize, validate, give suggestions, give statistics if they want to know on the average, you know, person, couple. They're the ones that are going to be going and continuing those hard conversations.
Hmm. Do you find this such a thing? And I think I know the answer already. Do you find there's such a thing as a typical client that comes to you that has, is there a sort of almost a standard set of questions that they have, or is each individual or each couple just so different?
I have been doing this, like I said, for 5 years, and I feel that every single client is different, even if their questions are the same. Because, of course, their experiences are different. Mm-hmm. How they define words are different. The most common, typical question or type of client is either a couple, if I'm lucky enough to have both people in front of me, or sometimes it's an individual client coming to me with questions about their relationship. And the most common question or the most common issue is mismatched desire. And what that means is one partner in this example, or most examples, it's, you know, typically a monogamous relationship, one partner having a much higher or lower desire than the other, whether that is how often they think about sex, how often they want sex, the type of sex when they are having sex that's important to them. And in some cases, they were very aligned when they met, and it's changed over the years. I'm finding more and more situations where they never really were as compatible as they thought they were when they first started dating, whether that was 2 years ago or 25 years ago. Yet in dating, and here's where I see it, you know, on the personal side as someone who's also dating, is a lot of people up front are not honest in dating. They're not honest in their relationships because they don't want to possibly have the person not like them, or they don't want to come across as a prude. And so they don't do things, you know, without consent per se. They don't do things that they're not, you know, willing to do, but they may not be doing things that they are as comfortable with or could be more comfortable with if they had more conversations about it or they slowed the process. But in dating, let's be real, sexual experiences for most people are part of dating. It is part of compatibility and seeing if that person is going to be a good, you know, partner that's going to meet your needs. And so I am finding more and more couples who are confused. One partner is confused, you know, but you did this when we first met. You were into that 20 years ago. You never, you know, said no before. It was, you know, even if you were tired. Well, sure. Change, you know, life changes. We change. And what I always, always, always make sure every client knows who comes and sees me, sex of all things always has to be something that you are okay with. It's never something that you feel obligated to because you haven't had sex with your partner in a month and you feel bad, or, you know, it has to always be something that we're comfortable with. And I think, like I said, most people in the beginning of dating are more willing to try things that maybe they're not as comfortable with. And that partner, without having the conversations, is going to expect and assume that is something for the long haul that you're comfortable doing. So a lot of those conversations come up as well, where there is mismatched desire, especially if there used to be less mismatched desire. What do we do with that? How do you work through that in a relationship?
It's interesting. So go back to your analogy about travel before. So it's a little bit like, you know, 25 years ago, I was happy to stay in a hostel or a, you know, a sort of one or two star hotel, whereas now I'm five star all the way. First class travel, that's what it is. I'm not in a change, but it's something that's changing, and it's I guess it's sort of same as sex, something that we tried, we liked, it was fine at the time. You know, 25 years later, you might have a couple of kids on the scene as a man, and might find it harder to get and maintain an erection for as long. As a woman, I might be going through perimenopause or menopause. It's a lot of things happen. So if a couple does come to you and they feel they have mismatched levels of intimacy or desire, rather, how does that couple stay together? Is that the key focus, or how do you try and close the gap between the desire? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And again, every situation is different. Typically, if a couple or individual, but in this case, we'll talk about a couple, is coming to see me as a couples therapist, as a sex therapist, I always say, at least for the time that I have them in the session, they want to be together. Even if one wants to be with the other person, you know, they would give it a 95% willingness and the other one is giving it a 5% willingness, I'm still working with them for that time frame as if they want to be together. Yeah. Unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you want to look at it, not all couples stay together. We know this.
Yeah.
And not all couples stay together, whether they go to therapy or not. Mm-hmm. So I will always come from a place, unless it is an abusive relationship, that goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. I will always come from a place of helping the couple stay together and find ways to work through what they're working through and coming to see me about, as long as they both want to. Mm-hmm. They don't both need to with the same, you know, desire that the other one does, but I've got to have something to work with. And I'm also an incredibly realistic therapist. If one person, with, you know, sex being the topic, if one person wants to be able to be in a relationship where they are having sex once a week and the other person is good with once a year, that's a very, very different expectation. That's going to be a lot harder to work with versus once a week and once a month.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think also a lot of couples, again, back to definitions, I'm big on words. A lot of couples define sex differently. Mm. Most people, when they say, when is the last time you had sex? What is the thing that you love about sex? Excuse me. Most people define sex as penis in vulva, sex in a bed with an orgasm taking place at the end. Well, that rules out so many types of sex and gender. So I work a lot with clients on their definition of sex, their definition of intimacy. Body parts might not even be in the equation, and you can still have an incredible intimate experience with your partner, whether that is being active outside, cooking a meal together, sitting on the couch and having an incredibly personal and vulnerable conversation with even some form of touch included, even if it's a hand, you know, on their hand while they're talking to you. Again, I understand that is different than having a sexual experience where possibly an orgasm or two happens. I want couples to recognize there are so many other ways to experience closeness and intimacy with their partner. And that sometimes helps, you know, lessen the gap a little bit. I'm also going to be honest, there are absolute people out there and couples out there where it is a hard pill to swallow and accept that they are not going to be compatible. They haven't been compatible for a while. Mm. And are they going to still choose to stay in that relationship and one person not have their sexual needs met? Because there are so many other aspects of the relationship that are wonderful. Mm. And some people choose to do that.
Yeah.
Others don't. And I'm not here to judge or say what's right or wrong. I am an advocate for happiness. That's the most important thing to me, that the person is happy. And if they're not going to be happy with their partner, even if it's someone they've been in a relationship with for a long time, they share children with, the hardest part about my job is having that conversation around possibly accepting the fact that the relationship has run its course.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a decision that only one person wants, the other one does not. So that makes it even more difficult.
Mm. That's a great answer. I love the fact you talked about the definition of sex. It's something I completely agree with. And I also, if you could almost replace the word sex with pleasure, life would be very different. Because, like I said, we've had this sort of goal oriented, orgasm focused view of what sex is. Mm-hmm. Exactly, you say, when did you last have sex? People aren't thinking about, well, when did you last, have an intimate moment with one another. You know, you can just spend 2 minutes just looking at each other. You can brush somebody's hair, you can give somebody a massage, you can whatever. You can just go out for a walk. It's they're small intimate moments. But I think sometimes what happens, it feels that a lot of those small intimate moments disappear, and which must mean actually having orgasm, ejaculation, penis in vulva, sex, even more difficult. So I think sometimes...
Absolutely.
There's lots of research, I think, as well, particularly for men, that we almost want sex as a demonstration of intimacy. And I think women like intimacy as a sort of precursor to sex, if that makes sense. And it's very
hit the nail on the head. You absolutely defined not all men and women.
No.
Most women need that emotional connection to feel comfortable having the sexual connection.
Yeah.
Most men need the sexual connection to feel the emotional connection. So again, what do you do with that? And each person needs to move a little closer to the other. So the woman needs to, if they want to, find a way to be a little bit more sexual so they can give that to their partner so their partner can give them the emotions that they want. And the man needs to move a little bit closer to the emotional side of things. And again, what does that look like? It could be a flirty text that you send to your partner in the middle of their workday. It could be reminiscing about something fun and adventurous you did in your early years of dating. And again, all of that falls under the umbrella of intimacy. It also all falls under the umbrella of foreplay. One of the best sayings I've ever heard, not sure if you're familiar with Dr. Emily Morse, but she's a sex educator in Los Angeles, and she's written a book. She has an amazing podcast. Her website is sexwithemily.com. She says, foreplay begins the minute you wake up. And I love that statement so much because, again, back to definitions, if you surveyed 100 people on the street, what does foreplay mean? You're going to hear oral sex, kissing, undressing, all the things that, quote, exactly, all the appetizers, so to speak, that come before, no pun intended, you know, the main course. What about waking up and telling your partner, you know, saying good morning, getting up and getting your cup of coffee and offering, you know, to get one for them as well. Picking up the dry cleaning that day because, you know, your partner is running late and they need that outfit for their meeting, you know, the next day. I can name a million examples. Those are the small gestures that so many couples don't do.
Yeah.
And they take each other for granted. Sure, I'm going to fill my mug for work. I could take 30 seconds and fill my partner's. But either I'm not going to because they didn't wash the dishes last night, or I'm just in such a rush. I could, but they can do it themselves. Meanwhile, you take the 30 seconds, fill their coffee mug, hand it to them as they're walking out the door. That might be the best thing that happened to them all day. That's going to be on their mind every time they go to sip, you know, that cup of coffee. Gosh, my partner thought of me. And it's such a simple gesture. Is it going to lead to hot sex that night? Maybe, maybe not. But that's not why we do it. We do it because we love our partner. We do it because we're empathetic to them. We think of them. And that's what a relationship hopefully is. Not just thinking about ourselves, thinking about the other person.
Yeah, definitely. And when people do come to you, and perhaps they do have that mismatched desire, the sort of once a week versus the once a year person, do you find that people or one partner increasingly tries to raise the topic of ethical non-monogamy? And I wondered how prevalent you see that as a potential part of couples' lives.
So I do think ethical non-monogamy, consensual non-monogamy, however you want to describe it, which is appearing quite often on the dating apps as well. Not as often, it's not the majority, but I am seeing over the 9 years as a, again, single person dating, I am seeing a lot more of that in the person's profile. With that being said, it is something that comes up in therapy once in a while. It's, again, not the majority because most couples are monogamous. But I think the idea around it, the interest around it, even if it comes up as a conversation just for education, you know, what does it mean when someone says they're in an open relationship? Does that mean they're swingers? Does that mean they just want permission, you know, to cheat? What does that even mean? I do work with some couples that are open. I work with some couples that have always been monogamous and are beginning to be open. So it definitely comes up in conversation. There are many, 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 talk about communication. There are many, many conversations that need to go into that possibly being a possibility in a relationship for someone, for a couple, because there are so many different aspects of non-monogamy and ethical non-monogamy, and so many ways it could kind of backfire, for lack of a better word. But I'm always open to the conversation, and especially if a couple comes to me that's not doing well, their trust is not there, their communication is not there, gosh, their friendship isn't even there. Opening up your marriage is not the best thing to do. That's like the couple who goes to have another child to kind of make the marriage better. Yeah. Having another child's not going to make the marriage better necessarily. So it's having those open and honest conversations and going back to the why. What are the reasons you're interested in opening up your marriage? What does that even look like? Is that something you and your partner can actually do together and share that experience together versus, hey, every third Saturday night, I get to go out, no questions asked, you know, and you never get to know who the person is or people are that I'm meeting. And again, for one couple, that might be what they want. I don't want to know what you're doing. Another person might be, wanting to share that experience literally in front of them and get to see what their partner is doing with someone else. So there are so many different layers and aspects to non-monogamy.
Yeah, but you put it so well. It's not, you think, well, I'm not getting enough sex in my marriage. So, yeah, let's explore an open marriage. And it's not the solution that you might sort of think. It's not a panacea, is it? Exactly like that. Let's have another child because that'll bring us closer together. Which is
I think a lot of people, and it is more common for the man to be interested in non-monogamy than the female. Sometimes it's not even that they're interested in a new person, in bringing an extra person into the bedroom. It's that they're just kind of over the sex that they've been having with that same person for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just being creative in novelty. Mm-hmm. Again, back to small gestures make a difference. If I just said to a couple last week, sex for them always starts laying down. I understand why most sex would start laying down. I said to them, next time you go to have sex, stand up. Start having sex standing up, or gosh, even just start kissing standing up. If you wind up then falling onto the bed and having sex, great, but start differently. I mean, heck, there's days I turn on one street rather than going down the same street I'm used to going down every single day, just because I want to see a different row of trees.
Yeah.
We need newness. And so even doing one small thing, saying one small thing versus what, you know, rinse and repeat the same sexes day after day, year after year, sometimes changing one little thing is as if they're having sex with each other for the first time. And it could be the most simple change. So we talk about that too.
I had a couple on a few months ago, and they were eulogizing about the how much their life had changed by incorporating role play, I'm not talking about anything crazy or wacky or wild, whatever it was. They said they first started out and thought, this is crazy, but they met in a hotel bar but didn't know each other. And ended up going back to the hotel and, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. And I said it like exactly like you say, it felt like they were having sex with a new person for the first time. And yes,
like they're strangers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. They do that occasionally. They might do that once a month.
That's a few very months, whatever, common. But that's a very.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's such a good, good way to try something new without trying something new.
Yeah. That exact example, the hotel bar, you quote, don't know each other and flirt with each other. The exact scenario I brought up yesterday when someone had asked me about what some of the common, you know, fantasies are or things that people think about. And that's one of them. So why not? Why not? I mean, it's so funny. As adults, we don't have as much fun as we could be and should be. We're not as playful as we could be and should be. As kids, kind of our job is to have fun, is to get dirty, is to try new things. Why aren't we doing that as adults? And I'm not just saying that has to be within sex. There's so many other aspects of life we can have fun and be playful. But if we are talking about sex, where are we being playful? If you happen to have whipped cream in your fridge because, you know, your kids like that on their pancakes every Sunday, who's stopping you from grabbing that bottle of whipped cream and bringing it into the bedroom that night? Even if it's as simple as, you know, putting it on your partner's shoulder and licking it off. Again, it needs to be something that you're comfortable with, but something that's fun and playful. You never know, once those walls come down and someone realizes, ooh, that's not as, you know, scary as I thought. Yeah. I'm not as uncomfortable as I thought I'd be, even if it's with my partner I've known for 30 years. I want more of that. Then before you know it, the whipped cream's being put in different places. And now they're trying different things, you know, as far as foods in the fridge go. So it's just being willing, like in life, to take that first step and seeing that it's not as bad as we thought it would be. It's not as scary as we thought it would be. And chances are a lot of other people are either doing the same thing or at least wanting to do the same thing. Yeah. And then it opens up so many more possibilities.
Mm. Just replace the whipped cream. Otherwise, the Sunday morning, the kids are like, hey, I'm sure this was full yesterday. yeah. let's go out for brunch.
One of the best stories I heard recently with a client I'm working with right now, she, I want to make sure I say this story right. She was needing to charge her vibrator and she was so annoyed because she went to go charge her vibrator and her kid had come in their room and stolen her charger because they needed to charge their iPad for school the next day. And the kid had lost their charger. So it was just really funny. Again, I'm all about normalizing things and making people feel comfortable, because why don't we explore our bodies more? Back to that question, you know, when was the last time you had sex? My answer would be with myself, with a partner. Like, who are you referring to? Because a lot of people also don't recognize, in a relationship or not, we have our own bodies to explore as well if we want to. And I work with so many women in their mid to late 30s into their early 60s who truly have never explored their bodies, have never felt comfortable with their bodies. And I'm not even referring to masturbation. I'm referring to even just when they're in the shower, taking the time to really touch themselves or be in touch with themselves. And that makes a big difference too. How we are with ourselves is going to absolutely show up in our relationships with our partners.
And it comes back to what you said before about the, you know, that lack of education and, you know, the lack of discussion. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the challenges is that if we don't educate, has such a harsh word, really, if we don't guide or have conversations with our young people, with our children, then they're going to go somewhere else. And I think certainly in the UK, and I'm sure it's something similar in the US, that the average age that boys in particular come across, you know, hardcore porn is like 12 years, 6 months, or whatever. And at 12,
yeah, it's even younger.
Well, there you go. So at 10, 11, 12, you're seeing this thing, and you don't have the emotional capacity generally to understand what it is.
And at that age, if it hasn't been talked about, boys most likely know that thing between their legs is called a penis.
Yeah.
And maybe in fifth or sixth grade, depending on the education system, there is some health class or discussion around, not even around sex, around puberty.
Yeah.
And that's about all they know.
Yep.
And so, yes, they find porn, they talk about porn. And I was just having this conversation with a couple yesterday. I feel that there are many ways porn can be a wonderful, beautiful thing to add to someone's sex life as a tool for education. There's also very negative things that can come of porn too, and how it can negatively impact your life. But that is absolutely not where I would send someone to go to. Oh, you have a question about what sex is? Go to pornhub.com and there you go. But again, it's an uncomfortable topic for a lot of adults in their 30s and 40s. We're certainly not going to have our 8, 10, 12-year-old come to us and say, hey, I want to learn about masturbation today. I want to learn about orgasm today. They're just not going to.
Yeah.
So just like other responsibilities we have as parents, it is our responsibility to educate, to inform our children, of course, when and where and how, you know, do we do that? Because let's be honest, most people by 2021 at the latest are having sex. I have met and worked with a lot of people who fall into that 3% of people, you know, 25 older, who have not had sex, but Most people are having sex before they graduate high school. The numbers, the ages are getting lower and lower. Oral sex is very common in middle school. We're talking 12, 13-year-olds. So if those things are going to happen, let's make sure we have conversations with our kids about it. Even if it's uncomfortable for us as an adult, I would hope that 10 minutes of maybe a little bit of discomfort as an adult, as a parent, will be worth it. For that child to understand what consent is, for that child to understand what a sexually transmitted infection is, pregnancy, you know, all the things that come with it. And those are not things that are talked about in those health classes. So
no, in the UK, they're talked about more, but I think that's harsh. No, because the first thing that children hear about sex is like the dangers of getting pregnant at a young age, the dangers of sexually transmitted diseases, it's all the negatives. There's nothing. And when I talk to both my kids about it, and I said, well, did they talk about pleasure and enjoying things and different things? No, gosh, no. And it was all about, the things to avoid, not the things that you could enjoy or could try differently. It's a shame, really. But just on the porn topic, and I noticed this on your website about sex addiction. I just wondered about, do you think porn addiction, sex addiction? I've talked to different people, and some people have said they aren't real things. There's no such thing as porn addiction or sex addiction. How do you help people when they come to you and they feel that they have an issue with porn or an issue with sexual contact?
So again, I'm very big on words. Yeah. I understand that we can look, again, kind of the contrast, two sides of the same coin. We can look at the word addiction, mm-hmm. and depending on how the person defines it, if it is something that is negatively impacting our day-to-day and our relationships. I worked with a client who felt that she had an addiction to exercise.
Yeah.
She was going to the gym 5 hours a day. And if that's the word she wants to use, I'm not going to sit here and be like, you can't be addicted to the gym. That's a healthy thing for you. That's a good thing. But oh, to alcohol, of course it's an addiction. So again, I'm all about the words. Mm. If the person is feeling like their relationship, in this example with porn specifically, is something that is impacting their life in a negative way, mm-hmm. in a way that they are not happy with, then let's have a conversation about it. If it is to the point where it is going to require further treatment than what I can give them, and it's going to require, you know, an outpatient group, an inpatient facility, something along those lines, then I'm not here to say sex addiction is or is not a real thing, because I have people in the professional community who look at it differently. Mm. So again, to me, it's not so much the word addiction. It's how is it playing a role in your life right now? And where did that come from? And sometimes it comes from early exposure to sex, whether that is real life or porn. Sometimes it comes from just the interest in sex. Sometimes it comes from the accessibility, where right now, if I wanted to, in less than 3 seconds, I could hop on my phone and be watching porn. Yeah. Maybe 10 seconds later, never done this before, but maybe 10 seconds later, I could be chatting with a real person. Mm. Don't know if it's really the picture of who the person is that says they are, but the point is, these days with technology, sex is available like that. Mm-hmm. And even if we're in a relationship, even if we have someone laying in bed next to us whose body, again, with their consent, is available to experience sex with, doesn't mean that's what we're looking for or want. Mm. So that's coming up a lot in relationships. Like, yeah, I get it if you were single that you'd be on OnlyFans and you'd be watching porn, but I'm right here. How come you're not asking me to experience that with you and you're going to the other room after I've fallen asleep? So there's a lot of, again, like everything else, a lot of conversations around that.
Yeah. And the reason I asked the question was that I heard a really, really fascinating and raw interview that Terry Crews did. Terry Crews, people in the UK, is one of the hosts of America's Got Talent. He was on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you know, big, big, muscular, incredibly good-looking chap, happily married, all those sort of things. But he said he got to a stage with, and he called it addiction, his porn addiction, where he would tell his partner he was going to filming, and he'd go and rent a hotel room and watch porn for 12 hours. And he said he couldn't stop. He said it was affecting my life. It was instead of spending weekends with the kids, I wasn't doing that. I was going to a hotel room and not seeing anybody, just watching more and more, more and more porn. Yeah. And I can't think of anything that describes an addictive behavior more than that. It was completely, it was impacting his life with his wife. He eventually broke the addiction and got past it and had therapy, and still he considers himself a recovering addict, because it's something that, as you say, I think the definition of addiction is it something you can't control and it's impacting your life in a negative way, and this absolutely was. So yeah, when people, it's the words people use, but it's how it makes you feel and how it impacts things that you would like to do, and is it something you want to be doing? And if it's something you don't want to be doing, it can't control, it feels like something that needs, as you say, needs addressing. And he got through it.
And it can affect anybody.
Absolutely.
It can affect anybody. It's not this dirty, sleazy guy who just can't get a date, excuse my French, get laid.
Yeah.
That's the guy that's doing it. It could be a family man, well-known person in the community, mm-hmm. and sex in general, as we've talked about today, is shameful in a lot of ways. People feel that way, at least. Mm. And you know, it's construed as that. And so who's going to say, oh yeah, honey, I'm actually not going to work today. I'm going and renting a hotel room and I'm going to sit and no one's going to admit to that.
No.
So the fact that yet a mom may say, I'm going to rent a hotel room and get room service and lay in a robe all day because I just need a break. Mm. 20 moms would be like, oh my God, sign me up. Mm. So when we are embarrassed and don't know how to get out of it, then yes, that is an addiction. That is a problem. And I'm so glad that he was able to come to that realization and get the help that he needed. And that doesn't make him a bad person.
No, not at all. I think the fact he talked about it, I think the fact he talked about it openly on this podcast interview, whatever, I think it's a very good thing. Because exactly as you say, he's a very wealthy, successful, happy, multi-home, beautiful wife, awards coming out of his ears, but still there was something. And for him, it was connected with early connotations of sex and sex in the family and how his family and treated each other, whatever. So there's lots of things behind it, but that was how it chose to manifest itself. But I think the fact he could talk about it, I'm sure it helped other people talk about it, which is going to be a good thing.
Absolutely. And I don't know his story, so I don't know his situation with his wife, but that is, I mean, somewhat of an extreme situation, but that is a situation where depending on the partner you have and depending on the type of relationship you've built, someone may stay by the person's side through that. Another one couldn't be packing their bags quick enough.
Yeah.
So that's it too. And that comes up a lot in therapy, in more in individual therapy. I don't know how to say to my partner X, Y, or Z because my fear is they're not going to want to be with me. Yeah. They're going to question their own selves. Like, well, gosh, if you're into that, how come I'm not good enough? Or I don't know you if that's something that, you know, you fantasize about. And so I also, back to education, and I don't mean education in a sense that the person isn't smart. They could have 20 master's degrees. Education in the sense of let's at least let our partner share with us how they're feeling and what they're thinking. And then let's process it and work through it. And if initially it brings up like an almost disgust, okay, you're allowed to feel that way. How come? Mm. You know, and again, working through it, because I truly believe I've seen enough couples over the years. If a relationship is healthy enough and both people want to be in it and have the communication skills, they can talk about and work through anything. I've seen it. I've seen couples work through infidelity. I've seen couples work through drug use. I've seen couples work through separating and getting back together. I've also seen couples not being willing to talk about things and they end their relationships over it. Mm-hmm. So of course, every situation is different.
Yeah. Just two more questions, if that's okay. So now you've got to go and start your day officially soon. So,
Put my mom hat on.
Yeah. One of the things that, and I always feel this for people in your situation and people that have dedicated themselves to do what you're doing, how do you look after your own mental well-being? Because some of the stories you must hear, some of them are sure are traumatic, some of them are grief-stricken, and some of them aren't necessarily, people aren't generally coming to you saying, hey, Kerry, I just want to spend a few hours with you, tell me how wonderful our life is, how amazing our sex life is, just want you to know that. They're generally coming to you with something fairly negative.
Hard stuff.
How do you stop yourself carrying their trauma, their pain? What do you do to step away from it?
Not to give myself a pat on the back, but I think it takes a special type of person to be a therapist, just like it takes a special type of person to be a kindergarten teacher, a doctor. I've just always been someone that is able and wanting and willing to hear other people's stories. And yes, there are certain clients that are going to affect me more than others. There might be some that I can relate to personally a lot more than others. And that brings up, you know, possibly certain things for me. I am very big on self-care. So it's very important to me that client isn't just my 9 a.m. time slot. They are Bob and Sue. And I know their situation. And I am in it with them for that 45 minutes to an hour. And then when that session is over, I've got to kind of, you know, move things around in my head a little bit and now get ready for my next, you know, Joe and what his situation is. So I think I've been just very good over the years. More experience has helped, very much being in with that client when they're in the session with me And then in between sessions, if I have time or throughout the week, I take care of myself. So whether that is being lucky enough to go down and put toes in the sand and go for a beach walk, meet a girlfriend for a cup of coffee, reading, you know, watching silly reality TV, spending time with my kids, I'm making sure that my whole life is not about my work. I love what I do, but everything has to be a balance. And if I know that there are certain clients where their conversations are going to be heavier than maybe another, if I can, I might try and schedule my day that way, mm-hmm. you know, and not have four very, mm-hmm. I'm not going to use the word difficult, mm-hmm. but trauma related or heavier topics back to back to back to back. And if I see that that's in my calendar that day, I prepare for that. You know, maybe that's the night that I'm not going to cook dinner. I'm going to go get takeout. That's the night that, you know, I'm going to plan to meet a girlfriend for a glass of wine just to kind of unwind. So I'm pretty good about self-awareness mm-hmm. and what I need to do to be the best therapist I can be for each of those clients throughout the day.
Hmm. And are you a forward-looking, a planner? What does the future hold for Kerry Green?
I am definitely a planner. I get made fun of that I still use a paper calendar like I did back in middle school.
If it works,
the
it works.
Future, yeah, it works. Exactly. If it works, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. My future is continuing to raise my kids, continuing to do what I'm doing now, continue to educate myself on different things that come up in the sex therapy world. I'm constantly reading. I always joke I need to stop buying books on Amazon because I've got to read all the ones I have first.
Yes, I'm same as
that. And just continuing to meet people and talk. I've had strangers come up to me and just say, you just have such a welcoming, you know, presence. I've had people randomly stop and ask me if I'm a therapist, which is a little strange because it's not like I'm, you know, shouting it from the rooftops. Just continue to be a people person, continue to be open and empathetic, and help people talk about the things that they're struggling to talk about. And if I can make a difference just in one person's day each day, I'm more than happy.
That's just fabulous vision of the future. You do have a very, very, what's the right word? I was going to say comforting, nurturing, welcoming. I'm not sure what it is. I'm not sure what the word is, but there's something about you that
you can say all three of those.
All three of those. Yeah. If I was sat in an airport lounge and just went and sat next to you, I think, oh my God, I missed my plane. It's just, you know, some people you can just feel you can just talk to and talk to and talk to, and not necessarily about sex, just generally. I feel you've got that sort of it's almost like a happy to talk badge you sort of got somehow tattooed on your forehead without you being able to see
it. Without it, I do have a few tattoos. That's not one of them. But I'm very appreciative that I have that gift, so to speak. I know not everybody does, and I don't.
It's great. It is a gift. And you're doing something with it.
I make sure to be humble about it, and I don't make it sound easy when I talk to clients like, how is it, you know, so easy for you to do X, Y, or Z? And I'll own it and say, it's not that it's easy for me. I've practiced it.
Yeah.
But everybody could go up. I give this as homework sometimes. Go up and strike up a conversation with the person at the grocery store, you know, who's scanning your groceries. Is that someone you're going to date or have a relationship with? Probably not, but it's practice just to be human. I wish more people, especially, we don't love to talk to you again another time. We don't have the time today, but I just wish more people would exhibit their kindness and I smile all day long to strangers because it's that saying, you never know what someone's going through. You don't know what kind of day they're having. And it's a simple gesture. So I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing and hope it affects people the way it does in a positive way. And that brings it back, you know, tenfold to me. And I'm very, very blessed and grateful for, you know, the life I have and the work that I do.
You're fabulous. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. So
I hope
nice
you have
to
a
meet
good
you.
Day now. All right. Take care.
Bye.